You're listening to Art Snap, a podcast giving you a quick skim of famous works of art.
Hey, this is Claire.
And this is Zach. Hey, Claire.
Hey, Zach.
How's it going?
It is great. How about you?
It's great. So I actually learned something about you this week that I didn't know before.
Oh, Lord. What's that?
Well, I've got lots of great blackmail material that I'm sure our listeners would love to hear about you, but no, it's something more wholesome. I heard that you, in another life, thought that you could be an architect.
I mean, I have so many careers that I imagine myself doing at some point, but right now I'm just going to be content with being an art teacher.
Well, you're a great art teacher, and we need more of them, so let's stick with that. You got a great thing going.
Oh, thank you, Zach.
So I understand this fun fact might also be tying into the art we're looking at today. Did I understand that correctly? Is it a little bit of a clue?
Oh, yes, it does. It does. Thanks for the hint. Today we're going to be discussing one of the most famous architects and one of his best known pieces of architecture.
Okay, well, that's a bit of a departure from where we've been with different artists and artwork, but that's cool.
Right, but remember we said art comes in many, many forms, so why would we limit ourselves, right?
Good point. I'm totally into it. So which architect made the cut for you this week?
Well, I guess if we asked our listeners to name an architect, the first one that would come to mind would be Frank Lloyd Wright. And we're going to look at his designs, one of many. He did homes, museums, even a mosque. But we're going to go into the woods of Appalachian Mountains of Pennsylvania and near Bear Run Stream. And we're going to hike up to a rocky waterfall.
Okay, well, that must mean we're going to learn about the one, the only, is it Falling Water?
You are correct, Zach. Built in 1936, one of the most famous houses ever designed. I had a really hard time picking one of his designs. There are many, but I also love, because I love New York City, the spiral-shaped Guggenheim Museum on Fifth Avenue, designed by him also.
Oh, yeah, that's a great building. In fact, my friend Carrie got me hooked on the Stuff You Should Know podcast, and they have a new episode about brutalist architecture, and they talk about that building. Yeah, it's fantastic. It's really good.
Okay. So the variety of places he designed is part of what makes him very interesting. So the urban Guggenheim stands in big contrast to this mountain retreat we're going to talk about today, Falling Water.
So I'm a little surprised you even picked Falling Water, because I feel like I remember many years ago you saying something to the effect of that Falling Water was like the Starry Night of architecture, over talked about and way too popular. Did I get that right?
Maybe, but I think that our listeners know of it, but maybe we can bring something else to the table and talk about how Frank Lloyd Wright made it happen.
I mean, he had an incredible artistic vision, and it was also that, you know, feat of engineering to make it all happen.
Yeah, definitely.
Can I tell you a secret, though? I'm kind of embarrassed to share this, but I've never actually seen it in person. I mean, I've always wanted to, but and people all the time say, oh, we went to see it. And I was like, it was wonderful. And yeah, I just kind of smile and nod along. But I feel like after a decade of living on the East Coast, it's time for me to probably get there. So I still haven't made it.
Oh, yeah. Well, hopefully this podcast will motivate you, Zach. And that's why we're here. We want to transport you and make you feel like you've been there. We're going to visit the Laurel Highlands part of Pennsylvania, and it's about 70 miles south of Pittsburgh. So we're going to drive up there. I went and visited, I think it was exactly 15 years ago. I know this because my sister was pregnant with her first child. So it's a good timeline for me. Drive up there, pass all these farm stands that are selling vegetables and kettle corn, my favorite. You're going to drive into the woods. You're going to hear birds singing. You're going to hear a stream, waterfall.
Oh, God, it sounds so peaceful. And I love kettle corn.
Right. You get the setting, right? Very rural. So that was the whole point. This home was commissioned by the Kaufman family. They live their life as successful department store owners, downtown Pittsburgh, kind of the who's who of the it crowd of Pittsburgh. Their department store would later become part of Macy's, but they needed to get away on the weekend. They were very outdoorsy people. So they wanted to go enjoy their beautiful property, this place that they would picnic and go fishing. They had this giant rock they would spread their picnic blanket off on. It's just gorgeous.
It sounds fantastic. So from what I've read, I remember the family would sneak away on weekends, kind of this is their getaway, just acres and acres of woods and streams and trails for hiking, and they were so into it.
Right. They commissioned Frank Lloyd Wright to build them a home so that they would have a place on this property that they would visit even before there was any home on it. They just enjoyed this peaceful waterfall was the main focal point of the property.
Gosh, wish we could be there right now. So tell us more about the house.
All right, well, we're getting there. Patience, Zach. We've got to describe the setting first because that is really integral to the whole vision of Frank Lloyd Wright. He believed in blending that natural setting and kind of visiting and seeing what environment and materials and kind of the feel of it so that he could create something that just was an extension of nature.
So kind of bringing the outside in, inside out, like that sort of thing?
Yeah, definitely. So the setting is more than just a forest with a stream, though. So we're in the mountains and we've got a waterfall, of course. It's cascading over this, you know, big, enormous rock. And the boulders are stacked up and they're kind of jutting out almost like a children's building block set.
It's my kind of place. Now, okay, you know I love nature, but sell me on the house because I'm so excited.
All right, we're finally there. It's time to talk about the house. So falling water is 9,000 square feet, which when I saw that number, I was honestly kind of shocked because Frank Lloyd Wright's creations, or at least his private homes, were kind of notoriously small scale. That was part of his design philosophy, was that every square foot was very usable and there wasn't anything extra or excessive. So it is 9,000 square feet made of concrete, steel, stone, glass, and wood. Wright called it organic architecture. Half of that square footage, though, is outdoor terraces, which makes sense, you know. The main floor is a very open living room. Teeny tiny little kitchen, though. This is their getaway.
Teeny tiny kitchen?
Oh, my gosh, so tiny.
Oh, that's never going to work for me.
I know, but I think that was their way of vacationing, right? You're not going to try to slave away in the kitchen. You're sitting out in the living room and visiting and eating, probably, and fishing, you know.
So the waterfall, if I understand, like somehow it doesn't come inside the house, right? Like how does the waterfall kind of interact with?
So sort of. The large rock that we've talked about a lot, sadly, other architects probably would have just like blown it to smithereens and dynamited it, right, in order to build properly. But this large rock central to the waterfall and stream, it juts up in. Frank Lloyd Wright allowed it to kind of stick up into the living room. So if you're sitting in front of the hearth, you are going to sit on that like very irregular shaped rock. Then go upstairs to the second floor. We've got three bedrooms. Frank Lloyd Wright even designed the furniture himself. He often put his own furniture designs in his spaces because, well, you know, he had specific visions for those interiors and how they should flow, how should they be used.
Yeah, I read somewhere once that in some of the homes he designed, he would require the owner to sign a document promising that they would use all of his furnishings and keep their placement in the space. Well,
yeah, I read that too. And he, you know, he had a very specific idea and feeling for each space. That's what an architect does, is design spaces.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little controlling, but as an artist, I guess he has this vision for how the piece should look and how he would want it to be perceived by the viewer. And I guess in this case, by the user, by the person living in the space.
Well, right. I mean, his art is not static, you know, like a painting or a sculpture might be. His art is designed to be used and lived in. So, yeah. But yeah, he definitely had strong opinions, very strong. And I love his opinions. I wasn't signing papers say I would live a certain way. But one of his philosophies, probably his best known one, is form follows function. In other words, what you consider beautiful or aesthetically pleasing should come from it being very functional, well-designed, usable. A good example of this is he would frown upon the fact that so many of our homes that we build nowadays, we all take for granted that like a design element, a finishing touch to a home would be the shutters, right? And very few homes actually have functioning shutters. They originally were part of a house design, not so that you could put an accent color on, but so that you could close them up when it's storming or if you wanted to darken the room or whatever, and then open them up to let the fresh air in. So over time, we just have adapted shutters as a aesthetically pleasing part of a home. Frank Lloyd Wright said, no, you make something very functional and well-designed, and the beauty comes from that.
Yeah. So let's talk about what else makes his house so special, because obviously the setting, the materials, his philosophies, that's a huge part of it. But there's more to it too.
Well, the structure is more than just like the materials that are put together to make it. The structure truly is poetry.
Yeah. I remember reading about his desire to even create a unified composition, like he would call it. And so going back to his interest in organic spaces, he limited even the color palette to just two colors.
Wow, only two. Okay, I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, so he would use a light ochre for the concrete and then his signature kind of Cherokee red for the steel. And at one point, he even considered gold leaf on the concrete. I mean, obviously didn't make it into the final design, but that's just a wild addition.
Yeah, probably for budget reasons.
Probably so for budget reasons. But I guess there's another way that he's creating this kind of harmonious composition, playing off the natural shape of the waterfall, using those massive windows, using kind of those irregular natural stones and the interiors of the house as well. Like it all kind of starts to feel cohesive, I guess, that way.
Well, yeah. And we've talked so excitedly about everything about this house, but I think we need to point out that I think what puts this house on the map is that the expected site was on a kind of a nearby hill where you would overlook the falls, which is what the family assumed would happen, right? Their beloved waterfall that they enjoy. You want to be able to look out your window and see it. When Wright walked the property, he had an artistic vision right away. He wanted the Kaufman's house to be not just looking at the falls, but actually part of the falls, like on top of the waterfall. So their living room just like hangs over their fishing hole. The staircase in their living room, like there is where you would be sitting in the living room, you kind of look to the side and there's this little like staircase that just like dips down and you can walk down and stand on a little tiny platform and, you know, just a couple feet below you would see the water just rippling by and then kind of like disappearing over the ledge of the waterfall. He wanted them, again, they loved to go fishing. He wanted them to be able to like cast the fishing line right from the living room.
I'd be like, honey, I'm going to catch dinner in the living room.
Yeah.
Well, that's where the incredible amount of engineering had to come into play, because to make all that actually happen had to be.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So it's this bold design presented the unique set of problems. It's one thing to kind of sketch it out on paper and have this artistic vision. It's another thing to make it happen. And that resulted in his designing that distinct cantilever design that kind of gives it its distinct falling water look.
Yeah, cantilevered. There's another 10-point word for you, Claire. That's a term that you often associate with Frank Lloyd Wright, though. Can you explain how that's used here? I mean, why is that important for falling water?
Okay, so to cantilever something, you have to picture a diving board. So you've got one end anchored down, and then you can kind of have these balconies soaring out without having a support at the far end. He uses concrete and steel to allow this to happen.
I'd imagine the mechanics on those types of designs can be really tough to uphold, though. I mean, over time, they just must be, it must be a challenge. I remember seeing where, I think with 2002, the balconies at Falling Water had started sagging at a certain point, like by seven inches or so, and they had to go in and kind of support them with cables. And
yeah, you're right. You're right. So, you know, I guess just like an old diving board that's been abandoned, right? It's tough when you're an artist with big visions of a project and you need to ground yourself in the math, the mechanics of the work. The structure did last for 70 years before it needed any renovation, though, to be fair.
Yeah. And to be fair to the architect, hundreds of thousands of people visiting and trampling those balconies, like that wasn't what he designed it for. He didn't design it as a museum.
Yeah, very true. Thankfully, this home is now being preserved and cared for by the Western Pennsylvania Conservancy since 1963. And it's also a UNESCO World Heritage Site.
God, I can't imagine how much this would have cost back in the day. I mean, do you even know?
The initial estimate was $35,000. And that sounds like nothing, right? Don't you wish to have a vacation home for that? The actual price when it was completed, though, was $148,000, which again, in today's housing market, big bargain, but compared to where it started, $35,000 to $148,000, and then I think there was like tens of thousands more tacked on for architectural fees.
Gosh, with inflation, that's like $3.5 or $4 million, I'm sure, which might have still been a bargain considering how prominent the family was. You know, Wright was already had a huge reputation at that point, and it was a very custom, one-of-a-kind home. But so maybe a bargain. I don't know.
Right. Well, no, I think that was a huge price tag back then, but the Kaufmans did not balk at it. I think they recognized who they had and what they had. But yes, no, you could not buy it for that now. It took them about 2 years to build it from 1936, 1937.
And it gained almost immediate attention and publicity, right? I mean, as soon as he kind of got into the project.
Yeah, even before the home was finished, it was featured. Frank Lloyd Wright was on the cover of Time magazine in 1937. And of course, that stirred a lot of interest.
Yeah, I wonder if this was a vision he had, like an epiphany, or if he agonized over every detail. I know when I'm getting creative, like I just lie there awake sometimes and think about every kind of detail of that.
We would all assume that this was not created on a whim, right? And I don't think it was, but there's this folklore that says Kaufman was just like nagging, like, when am I going to get these plans? And Frank Lloyd Wright pushed him off and just like pushed it off for 9 months. And one day, finally, I think Kaufman was driving from Pittsburgh. He's like, I'm driving up to see the plans today. Like, I'm leaving right now. And Wright's apprentices tell the story on the day Kaufman was meant to arrive. I think it was like 140 miles to drive up to, I believe, Milwaukee. But he finished his breakfast. Frank Lloyd Wright did. Finished his breakfast, knew Kaufman was like on the way, went to his studio, and there he like drew out the whole thing.
That's amazing.
Which I'm sure it was up in his head. It's not like he just created it in a couple hours. I'm sure he was just like working out in his head. He just put it to paper when the pressure was on, you know?
Right. So either had the epiphany or he had been working on it for 9 months and then just kind of gave birth to it right there. So how can we see Falling Water in person?
If you want to tour Falling Water, you can visit the property near Bear Run Nature Preserve, Fayette County, Pennsylvania, and it's just outside of a little small town called Mill Run, and open to the public, and it's a fantastic tour.
That's a short drive from here, and it's probably, I guess, time for me to make good on that promise to see it in person.
Yeah, I'll go with you, Zach. It's been like 15 years for me.
That sounds great. Love to do it. All right, we'll see you next time, Claire.
See you next time, Zach.
Bye. If you'd like to learn more about the work of art and the artist, check us out on Instagram, artsnap.pod.
If you liked hanging out today and talking about art, rate us and subscribe wherever you download your podcasts.
See you next time.